Hello, Deborah.
Hello. Hello, hello.
How are you?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Debbie
just invited me to join in, and you know, this is extremely spontaneous, so I'll listen and try to understand what's going on here.
Where are you from?
I live in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh yeah?
And when we're not isolating, I tend to be in northern New Mexico quite a bit.
Oh, well, welcome.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Santa Fe.
Very good. I have several friends there.
Great. I have to let these people in.
Thank you.
Oh, Michu, hi.
Hi.
I love your picture.
Oh, thank you.
Now what I want to do is make a list of Dawn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, I'm trying to find the video here. A little slow.
That's okay.
Here it goes.
I'm copying down the names of the people as they come in. And Brenda, hi Brenda. She's, oh dear, there's another one. And that was Steve. Hello, Steve. Hello, Steve. Can you hear me? No, he can't.
You can't hear me at all.
No, I can just now hear your voice, but it's very soft.
I'm going to turn off the mic. All the way up.
Isn't that funny? I don't think there's anything on my computer.
No, I barely hear Steve as well. I'm thinking either he needs to go to audio settings and turn up his output, or perhaps, do you have headphones in the computer?
Can't hear you.
Of course, he wouldn't be able to hear us too if he had headphones in. They'd be sitting on the desk somewhere.
I can hear you fine.
Oh. That sounds better.
A little. Still a little muted. A little muffled.
Yeah, I'm getting bars. And
yes, better.
Yeah. Don, could you say that again? It sounded like you were kind of muffled too.
I thought I could hear him. Can you hear me?
No. You're good. You're good. Sorry.
Yeah, Michu, I hear
you. I can hear you fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Joanne. Here we have Dawn.
So I've got this weird thing going on with my lips. What's going on? It's coloring my teeth today. Okay.
Oh, dear. Hi, Dorothy.
Zoom is taking liberties with my appearance. I don't know how to fix that.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Not the same, but yes.
How about now?
Better.
Put my input volume all the way up.
Huh. Yeah. Oh my gosh, how do I fix this?
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm trying to get my camera to work. There we go.
Great. I have this vision of people coming to my house, parking a long way away, walking through water, trying desperately to get to my front door.
Right.
But everybody is persistent. Is that light behind me is a nuisance, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not optimal.
You want to have a light in front of you.
Or I shouldn't sit in front of it. Let me turn this away. There.
A little better.
There.
Yeah. There we go.
Great.
Kind of dark.
Oh, hi, Brenda.
Hi. It's sort of dark in here. I never can get the light right on these Zoom meetings.
I know that you can tell the difference between the people who spend lots of time on Zoom and the ones of us who only do it every now and then.
You always want to have the light in front of you. You don't want to have it behind you.
Do what? Hi, Joanne. Nice to see you.
See you.
It is really dark. Let's see.
Now, Deborah, you're in Colorado.
Yes, so I don't want to butt in, but I had remarked to Debbie Cat Brody that I wished that I could hear what she would read tonight, and she gave me the link. I hope that's okay with everyone.
Absolutely, absolutely, and we'd like you to read something too.
Thank you.
I'll put you on the list, and when we come around, maybe you'll have something ready.
Very good. Thank you. That's very kind.
Of course. We're a small group, so we have more flexibility than a lot of others.
Right.
So we should take advantage in every way. So there's Nancy Beauregard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, dear.
This is Basia.
So excited to be here.
Well, I'm so glad we were able to get that going.
Me too.
There's Debbie. And Bartel. Anne. That looks like fun. So we still have people coming. Guess I'll give them a minute or two. Mishu, how are you feeling?
I'm tired, but overall I'm okay. Thank you. I'm just really preoccupied with the day glow lips that Zoom has given me, and I'm seeing if I can find a way to tone it down. But it's just such a labyrinth. Zoom.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Because it's telling me my speaker's not connected. And okay. I invited my friend Deborah Kelly. I hope you don't mind. She's a fabulous poet from Colorado.
Yay.
Yes. We've had a chance to meet her. Maybe she'll read.
She better.
Okay, so maybe I'll start. The problem is that if I do, I might forget to look at the screen and see anybody who needs admitting. But we'll just take our chances. I had a quote I wanted to start the evening with, especially under the political circumstances we're in. This is from William Carlos Williams. He says, "It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there."
Oh, man.
So I've written down the names of people as they've come in, and we're about ready to begin. I've got, here's the first three people that I have: Dawn McKellar, Michu, Deborah Kelly. So, shall we begin? Dawn, can you lead off?
Sure. The war is coming. The war has not visited this house yet. It only comes to us through the TV set. No, it's not come here yet today, but it affects us anyway. No sandbags line the garden path, no craters in the aftermath of airplanes overhead that may be delayed by weather patterns that have made snowbanks to show where the sandbags will go. The war is coming, as we all know. There were no wars on my watch, although I was trained as a warrior. I served on active duty on board the United States Navy guided missile destroyer, but there weren't any wars on my watch during that 10 and one half year period of my adult life between Vietnam and Desert Storm. So I don't really consider myself as a veteran of the armed forces, although I have two DD-213s that released me from active duty as both an enlisted white hat and an officer and gentleman on behalf of the President Ronnie Reagan's. It was much more like serving in the Sea Scouts, and it often seemed as if our mission during the Cold War years was to simply show the flag and frighten the fish, as the saying goes. I was married for 20 years, also no wars on my watch, yet that marriage ended in divorce, opened the door to one of the great loves of my life, at least for the 6 years we passed together before she passed away. I'm not a quick study. I'm not exactly sure what lessons, if any, I've taken from each of the events I've just described to you, or why I continue to write of them as I do. Perhaps the effects of war still leave a mark even on those who've been spared the fury of warfare, because of course the horrors of war continue to lurk in the shadows of awareness, even within the innocent among us all. These days, I consider myself as retired to a base of operations from which I while away my time as second generation scooter trash, a pastime pioneered by my parents on a 1939 Indian Sports Scout motorcycle. I too have found solace in the song of the highways and the call of the open road. I answered that call during the summer of 2020 by driving across the heartland of the country during the final year of Trump's fake presidency, while there were riots happening all across the country. Driving through the heartland of North America, through town after tiny town with a grain elevator, a couple of churches, a liquor store, and a cafe that's often out of business these days, one is struck by a sense of impending isolation. This is where the grain is grown to sustain the population of a global power. This is also where the youth is grown to feed the source of that power, or at least the armed forces that must be deployed in legion to the edges of the empire to protect the haves from the have-nots. Such is the way of expanding empires, which, like the stars that shine down upon them, burn brightly for the duration of their existence before they all implode and collapse. You can already feel the pressure of the current implosion fueled by pandemic and widespread civil discord. Postscript, an epigraph. What is coming, 2/16/03, reads like a biblical verse notation, but it's actually the date. Part of this poem was written 19 years ago by Leonard Cohen. Oh, and one more thing. you aren't going to like what comes after America. I wrote that when I wasn't sure Trump was going to get another one of his, another section. On a happier note, I'd just like to end with a quote from Mahatma Gandhi. When I despair, I remember that all through history, the way of truth and love have always won. There have been tyrants and murderers, and for a time they can seem invincible, but in the end, they always fall. Think of it, always.
Great, thank you, Dawn. And I guess I should go over the rules before we proceed. We're gonna try to keep our reading to 3 minutes, and quite often we finish early enough to have another circle around. So if you have a wonderful poem that you want to read, you could wait for the second round after your first poem. Sometimes we've gone 3 times. At any rate, Michou, you're up. And after Michou, perhaps Deb Kelly.
Okay, I'm usually not the one reading current events poems, but I was finding things coming as I meditated on the many layers of the Ukraine situation. So I'm reading 3 poems that are kind of unfinished meditations inspired by that, and I think their common denominator besides Ukraine is the sense of remove and incomprehension that sometimes impotency that comes when you are in a place of remove from these things. The first one is real short. It's called Free Dissociation. Leni Riefenstahl, Stalin, Lenin, Putin, Rasputin, koala, bear, butter, fly, Santa, Claus, and Claus is spelled with a W. So that one's an easier one to understand if you're actually seeing it printed. The second one is called Ukraine, U-K-E, rain. It's more stream of consciousness. My dog has fleas and colors run in the downpour. You crane your neck, but ring a chicken's. In powerlessness, we state the obvious, even when it makes no sense. Innocence and senseless violence, good and evil, need each other to know themselves, but not God. Incomprehension, we turn to humor. In isolation, we turn to hummus. In self-preservation, we turn to stone. In Russian, we turn to vodka. In powerlessness, we turn away, but not God. And the third one is an unfinished meditation called Poessive Aggression. I was contemplating poetry as passive aggression and entitled it Poessive Aggression. I name it from the high ground among the spectators and generals, a writer with clean fingernails. I name it with sharp quill, cunning simile, and diamond light that cuts through smoke. I name it, game it, frame it with laser gaze unswayed. Firing into mists of incomprehension with an arsenal of words. A gas mustered from of meaning, morality, metaphoric ordinance, and disorderly constructs. I name it a brazen dart to the transgressor's rear flanks, laming it, waking indignance in somnolent citizenry and courage in the lumbering infantry. You are muted, Buzz, Beja.
Yes, and so is everyone else, but I don't know how to. Can you unmute yourselves and we'll express pleasure. That's nice, that's good. I think it's good to mute ourselves while the people are reading because it makes the voice clearer. All right, here are the three next people to read. It's Brenda. No, I don't want to skip Deb Kelly. She's first. And then after her, Brenda, Steve Hendricks, and Joanne Brown. So, Deb, do you want to participate?
Thank you. I'm grabbing something out of my grab bag. This is something a little uncharacteristic and experimental, but it might have some relationship to other poems that are being read tonight. So I'm gonna lay it on you. Organs and gold. History tells us the gods were hungry. Beasts and other people were food. The Jaratanga and the Hihimes, gods ate them regularly, often to death. But all deities gorge on their own creations, aided by warriors and priests. What do yours eat? We sacrifice men, we sacrifice women, everyone sacrifices children to a higher power with a mandate for infinite growth. This is what your deities eat, and we feed them. We also eat the food of the gods if we can. I blame the deities. None of this would have come to pass without perplexity in brains untrained in the art of dancing with terror like a life-size doll. I blame you. When for relief your perplexity gets screwed into a kingdom all of winners and losers. If from this refuge you mark targets, reject refugees from war. This is why I don't pray near gilt edge pages or edges of volcanoes. Nothing feeds gods like the smoke of our organs and gold.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. That's a wonderful contribution from Colorado. Okay, I'm going to repeat 3 minutes, please. Brenda. Brenda, are you here?
Yes.
Would you like to read?
Sure.
Now, when she's done and you want to clap, you have to unmute yourself because I don't know how to unmute you.
Okay, shall I start?
Go.
Okay. Let sleeping dogs lie. Who is that man standing on the corner, wrapped in his buffalo butt beard, wanting to work for food, he says, but no one believes. Him, even the ones who throw dirty coins his way, smiling. Is he your brother? Matted hair, hole in his head, that teddy bear on the box he slept in last night. Why, he's crying, reading in the New York Times a story about someone else dying. Blotchy wet paper falls apart in his hands. Come home soon, son. Come home, son, Papa had said. Now he reads his professor Papa is dead, yesterday's news, and the home he left for a while is gone forever. The truth is, he prefers this stray dog life, the freedom of it all. No one telling him what to do, when to get up, and what he can or can't drink and smoke. We see him differently, and I'm not sure whom we believe. But right now, he is sad, and we don't matter. He curls up in the concrete end zone of a parking lot under a leftover shade tree. Obstinate August air breathes down his neck, with nowhere to go and no desire to go there anyway, if he knew where. Could he find his way home without help? No one would help him anyway, and if someone tried, he wouldn't let them. He doesn't want anyone because there's nothing a body can do. Our heart aches for him for a while, and after some time, we can't say how long. All of us dreamwalkers remember to laugh, forgetting we loved him once, and now we don't know where he is. We lost track, and he quits calling, and we are whipped, waiting. It hurt more than aloud when we paid attention. And today he reads about us in the New York Times, and we are dead, and no one ever got to say goodbye.
Great. Thank you, Brenda. I think that's the first time you read here.
Yeah.
I know you were here. You visited last time. Okay, good. After Brenda comes Steve.
All right.
You're going to have to really speak up.
Lullaby. Sleep, child. Sleep while you can. Daylight is yet to be known. No one has entered your stillness. Life is this moment alone. Eons before your beginning, an impulse of fate was designed, moving within each endeavor, the trademark of this humankind. Vectored unchangingly into our lives, each traveler follows its bulk. All consciousness lives in its shadow. Each frail mortal heart bears its mark. Emptiness plotted in endless regression, spiral of songs without rhyme, vortex of soulless unseenness born in the cauldron of time. Dear child, if I could, I'd change history before your eyes open at dawn and turn back that headlong precision that bears our lives heedless along. Yet two passions converge in the heart of a child, and each speaks a rhyme of its own, one for the fate we are bound to obey, and one for the boundless unknown. And fate can be false in its reckoning when the heart bears a course of its own. And love wields a power in its beckoning that calls the heart back to its home. Till morning light calls you from sleeping, rest well ere you rise to the day. Hold fast to the secret endowed to your keeping that slips all too easily away.
Thank you, Steve. And where are you reading from?
Where am I right now?
Yeah, where are you?
In Albuquerque.
Where?
Albuquerque.
Ah, great. Thank you. Now, we're going to have Joanne Brown next, but after Joanne comes Dorothy, Nancy Beauregard, and Debbie Brody. Joanne, welcome. You're muted.
Okay, thank you. I have two poems. They're rather short. They're for my grandma Jenny, who died pretty much while I was being born. And for whom I am named. I know very little, almost nothing about her, and I'm trying to figure her out. There is some Yiddish in so the other language that you'll hear in these poems is Yiddish, and I'm not going to pronounce it very well, but here goes. Okay. Ellis Island, June 2nd, 1917. Dear granddaughter of my imagination, ich komm bazunder, I am coming apart. Sick every morning, my lips cracked, hungry, nothing but salt water to wash down the foul food, to clean my body. I miss my mother, her bosom, Noodlekugel, and Kasha. I miss the light in the kahila. It is mostly dark and steerage. The stench from the latrines makes me dizzy and weak. Men look queerly at me. They are hungry too. 10 days from Polotsk, 2,000 people. How strange they bring us up to see that statue, a goddess, and we pass her holding our breath. My legs will need to walk the gangway. Some call this island, Ellis, the island of tears, but I am told here there is no czar, no pogroms. I bend, kiss a handful of this new soil. An interpreter, a money changer, a doctor, and more stink from the disinfectant they spray on us. They ask me questions. Am I an anarchist, a polygamist? I am 19 years old. I am something new. My legs are still at sea. Will I be able to keep my balance in this new land? Will I someday have a daughter, a granddaughter? Shana Maidla, I want you to know about my crossing to something terrible, beautiful. Ziegesund, Jenny. And then I have another. The title of this is, I'm not going to pronounce this very well, Zeitblickek, Shana Maidl. If I hold this photo in my palms, will she know my name? Her death, my name. A postcard, sepia toned, blank back, edges frayed. She stands sideways to the camera, face luminous, turned slightly toward me, a black velvet dress sashed at the waist, fur collar, fur around the collar, wrists, buttons to the elbow. She leans on a carved wood pedestal, pale, delicate hands atop each other. In that dress, you wouldn't know she fled pogroms, sailed to Brooklyn, bore Leonard, Lillian, my mother, Rosalind. I find her face, an oval like mine, her face, my face. What did she think on that foul ship when she glimpsed the goddess statue? Did she thank God? What did she miss? What did she dream? I can hear her. Zeit glicklek, Shana Maidla, be happy, sweet granddaughter.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Okay, we're ready for Dorothy.
All right. Hang on a minute here. There we go. My poem is called A Cardiac Morning. A widening pool of light climbs the wall as a new day leaks in through the windows of her bedroom. While her eyes are still closed, the wispy fog of sleep begins to dissipate. Her mind awakens slightly, and she senses an unfamiliar stillness, a heaviness, foreboding. Then a low humming sound, not unlike music. It's coming from where? She struggles to rise, feet touching the cold floor. A flash of pain buries itself deep in her left breast as she fights back the dark of ebbing consciousness. She calls out, not to whatever disinterested gods there may be, not to the cold, empty universe, but to the warm body that has lain beside hers for more than a quarter century. She floats on a cloud of unreliable awareness, fainting, waking, fainting, waking. Somewhere in between, she thinks she may be dying. Then a vision comes, a stack of unpaid bills, unanswered queries, unfinished poems. And another thought, Is this how it all ends? Are we destined to leave through our inbox? She slips away again, does not hear the sound of an approaching siren in the distance.
Thank you, Dorothy. Scary, isn't it?
Very much. But she ended up with a pacemaker.
Good. Thank goodness.
You can stop talking about yourself in the third person now.
Do what?
You can stop talking about yourself in the third person now that you've finished the poem.
Yes. We're back to first person.
Great. Okay, Nancy Beauregard. Nancy, it's your first time here?
This is my first time here. I'm in Santa Fe, and I'm in an MFA program. Went back to school, and so I'm doing my MFA in poetry, and we'll graduate in the summer.
Wonderful.
A bit old, but it's never too late, right?
We've all been there.
Okay, so my poem is called Unconditional. A poem is a porch rocker, slight push of wind, scent of strong coffee in the morning, pine sap that sticks to branches above a tire swing after last night's thunderstorm. It is a flock of turkeys that cross the damp field, trample wildflowers, sweet hay and clover, looking for insects underneath the drooping willow. Tom dances, struts, taps feet on the ground, fans gold and brown tail feathers as his hens walk past. He stops, waits, while the rocker misses a beat and wind holds its breath for her to emerge from the wood on a crooked foot. I see how it slows her down, how he patiently waits for her to catch up. And when she limps past, pushes his wings to the ground, tail feathers held high, tells me in his proud gaze, she is the most beautiful woman he has ever seen.
Thank you, Nancy. And now we have Debbie Brody.
I'm gonna break the rules and read two things because it's freezing in the sunroom. So I'm gonna first read a piece that was accepted today in an anthology about the Ukraine, but was written in 2015. Translating the Ukraine, letters from a young cousin in Odessa. Daughter of a broken arm, legs drove the wheels, shot down at the speed of a black Jeep. The evening moved to make things square, details in bags and rustling bills. Our nation is ready to give his last shirt. Vladimir's cathedral and walking on subway cars with dull drawling. A guy cleaned paws off my shoulder, walked to the exit of transition. He graduated with grief in half, three classes. But all this being said, the flowers. That was the first of, you know, it took me three rounds to really translate that letter. That was the first round. So it's a found poem. And this is the bottom half of an essay about my family that is in the Ukraine. My eight great aunts and uncles killed in the Holocaust and their children that never were, I see them making do in Russia, the Ukraine, especially Odessa, Kiev, and Belotserka, with the two who survived. I imagine their descendants in the 1990s so pleased to have two dresses now, twice as many as they had for the preceding 20 years, while still sharing an apartment with four other families. But now perhaps those families could be their relatives, though I know damn well that's not how the oligarchy works. Still, I see their children announcing themselves in school at attendance as Jew rather than as Russian, as is required for them, and how often they are bullied as a result. I wonder how many of my imaginary cousins would have been traded for wheat in the 1970s, allowed to leave for Israel. Would my dead great aunts and uncles have produced 50 offspring, 15? And how many of these would have produced the cousins of my generation? But maybe their beshirts, which is Yiddish again, meant to bees, also burned in the ovens or were gassed in the showers, starved and or marched to death. I have survived and remember and imagine they're never to be born. I am well suited to that job. Am I healing the past with my imaginings or simply filling the air with non-existent ghosts? Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Wow.
Okay, we have the next three readers who will be, sorry to be so short notice on this, Anne Bartel, and then Marina, and then me. So Anne, are you okay? Are you there?
I am here, thank you. Great. Yes.
And are you in Santa Fe?
No, I'm in Amarillo.
Super.
So thank you for welcoming me, and I'm enjoying you all. Thank you. I haven't named this one, but if I would name it, I might call it One in One. Fitful, yes, full, fathomless, mindless hunger and deviant thoughts. I cannot stand how many motions through my form eat away at my stable sanity. I've given myself to being. I'm married here, here. Oh, how you capitalize on my presence. Do not mistake me for a tool. I am simple, empty, plain. What? You say you're plain, Annie? I can't believe this computer thinks it knows my mind more than I do. It keeps auto-correcting my perfectly imperfect misspellings. Mother taught me to punctuate and arrange sentences correctly. She taught me to spell. At 20, I decided I was done with correcting myself anymore. I set myself free and left to continue a life of learning from others. Illusion. I was never free. I had to quote everyone. I had to reference everyone. No one believes anyone else without a referral of source. My ID. I cannot even proclaim my daughter as my own without a picture of myself in a regulatory institution. Bleed, mother. Bleed your love for me. For us. Oh, how I long for a reprieve from my incessant failures and incompletions. I am humanity's unwanted child, homeless yet sheltered. None of this is mine. None of this was set aside to care for me, yet I am still cared for. Impossible. I cannot contrive of any other existence. How slow my karma burns. I am an old oak, wet with bog, dark with peat. I burn forever. My body knows slow. My mind blows so fast and violently, I cannot stand the wind sometimes. It breaks me and shatters my walls. They were glass anyway. I cannot stand glass. I want the windows open. I want the door wide. Stay out, unless I invite you. I left my doors and windows open to my soul, but you weren't supposed to perch and dine. Your presence is festering inside me now. Did you not know what you did? Did you not know that when you praised me that I opened wider? You hungry wolves, have you not the decency of the vulture? Can you not wait until I am dead to have your feast? Oh, sister, oh, brother, get out. I've had my last of your insurrections. I cannot have you here anymore. I am with him. He alone may impregnate me. I am his bride. Sickness is not my sin. Death is not my fear. Money is not my glory. Free to feel, free to sense, free to speak, free to move. I am my own blood. I am purified in radiance. There is no beginning and end in my words. There is no punctuating my moment. I am as full. I am as complete. I am aware of my own simplicity. I choose here. I grant myself permission to full occupancy of self. Bleed, Annie. Bleed, Annie. Bleed wife. Bleed husband. Bleed mother. Bleed father. Bleed all you animals I've sacrificed so that I may know you. Do not mistake me. Do not mistake me. Bleed love. Bleed. I cannot take such fullness without orgasm. Why are you wasting yours on ass, tits, cock, and cash? Do not sell the beloved's treasure of procreativity. Secure this kingdom with love. Shut all the gates that allow you to become distracted. Seals everywhere needed. I surrender. Seal me up. Mummify me until I attain perfection. Father, I am shuttered. I am shut. Shut up. Ascend in silence. Bleed peacefully. You are the one. Serve me. You, we, rise, cleanse. Rage with fires of truth, rage, fury, feast, limitless light, radiates peace. Feast on it. Devour the brilliant diamond mind, diamond heart. Fill this cup. Water this garden, break down the illusory walls and send me to bliss. I am ecstasy's primal dancer, prima donna, Madonna, lady of the whitening, albedo, come into me. It is Sunday. I birth, I bleed, I water the garden. I have set free that which has been contained, Chiambella, the beautiful soul, sun's daughter. And I'm going to end it there because it's way long. So thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you, Anne, and welcome. I hope you come again.
Thank you.
After that, we get Marina. If you have something ready.
I wrote something a couple of hours ago, so it's very raw. As I was walking today on my walk, I burst into tears hearing the news about Ukraine. And so this is, I'll try to make out my handwriting. Nothing else. Palestinian, Uyghur, Rohingya. They don't even have a country to be invaded so the world can be enraged. Haitian, Yemeni, Afghani, they have a country. Yet they too feel terror, grasp their children and hope to survive another day, to reach a place where they may strive to build a dignity. If nothing else, we must honor their existence by recognizing it. If nothing else, they are us, are they not? A conversation today at the birdseed store. I order a flat of suet and say to the woman next to me in line, if World War III starts, we can always eat it ourselves. At night, hoping I fall asleep before it gets light, I wish for a trick to turn off my racing mind.
Thank you. Thank you. I see Nancy Helgerson. Are you here? Okay. Did you say something? I think there's a voice there. Your face.
I'm just listening, not reading.
Okay. All right. That's good. So what I have is the New Mexico Museum Foundation sent out their monthly summary of things, and they had an article about archaeomagnetic dating, which I have summarized in a one sentence summary of their several pages. In some clays that have been fired to a very high temperature neutralizes their own characteristics and creates a magnetic marker that can be used long in the future to know when that firing took place. Well, I got quite excited about that. And thought, oh, New Mexico, of course, is a wonderful source for finding those pieces, those adobe bricks that you can date because they have been fired to their own Celsius number. Each element, I guess, has a different place where this thing happens. So here's my poem. It's called The Psyche and the Horno. Adobe Horno, always been there. In its bricks, artifacts of occupation, it stores local intensity to give the North Pole a magnetic declination. As if you could unfold a treasure map, nail it to some stealthy selfie stick to fly like a bird dog to its wealth in history. Automatic. Like those bricks, our cells hold memories of crucial meeting, indelible mistake, or traumatic occasion with their violent denial or throbbing ache. In time, a moment comes, unstoppable as summer heat wave, to unfurl that memory fixed when firing past the Curie point, to unfurl the expression of the magnetic field lodged there for years. But praises be, our minds can find relief from those frozen and recurring stabs and fears. I don't know if you can follow that. Okay, so we're finished with round one, and it's 7:15. Would you like to go for another round? Okay, let's plan on doing that, and we'll follow the same pattern, and we'll start with Dawn McKellar, if you would like to read, Dawn. You're muted.
Yeah, trying to unmute, not really adept at this stuff. I've got a short benediction that I'd like to read. It's from a book by N. Scott Momaday. He's Native American, Kiowa, but with a PhD from Stanford, apparently. Retired here in Santa Fe, it says, although our paths have never crossed. He wrote, "Yahweh to Urset, I pray that you are kept safe throughout the day, that you live as holy as you can, that you see things that you've not seen before, and that more of them are beautiful than not, more of them delightful than not. I pray that you hold easily in your hands the balance of the earth and sky, that you laugh and cry, know freedom and restraint, some joy and some sorrow, pleasure and pain, much of life and a little of death. I pray that you are grateful for the gift of your being. I pray that you celebrate your life the proper way, with grace and humility, wonder and happiness, in the strong, deep current of your spirit's voice. I pray that you are happy and love."
Hold on a second, Don. Steve, would you mute yourself?
What is that noise?
It's Steve. Steve's mic is on and it's feeding back.
Is that this one doing that?
Hello, Steve. Steve Henricks?
Yeah.
Can you mute yourself, please? Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Dawn. You're muted.
Unmute. Does this work?
Yeah, that's good. And you'll have to go back a ways because we've been having that echo.
Yeah, I could hear something, but I'm not much of a Zoomer, I guess. Yeah.
That's okay. You were reading the poem from...
Yeah, Momaday's book, Death of Sitting Bear. It's rare. It seemed like a nice benediction. It's upbeat for a change. You know, he wrote, "I pray that you are kept safe throughout this day, that you live as holy as you can, that you see things that you've not seen before, and that more of them are beautiful than not, more of them delightful than not. I pray that you hold easily in your hands the balance of the earth and sky, that you laugh and cry, know freedom and restraint, some joy and some sorrow, pleasure and pain, much of life and a little of death. I pray that you are grateful for the gift of your being. I pray that you celebrate your life in the proper way with grace and humility, wonder, and contentment in the strong, deep current of your spirit's voice. I pray that you are happily in love in the dawn and that you are more deeply in love in the dusk.
Beautiful. Thank you.
He got away with words, didn't he?
It's really so much. All right, after dawn, we'll ask Michu and then Deb Kelly, if Deb Kelly is here. Michu?
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't know how many people here follow David White's three Sundays. He does every other month or so. He's been doing these three Sunday talks, and when he put out the email announcing his upcoming one this month, he posted a poem in that email. I don't know how many people saw it, so I think I'm going to read that. It too is a response about Ukraine. And it accompanied it was a picture of a long, long, long conference table with Mr. Putin on one end and one other person on the other end. And it was just this incredible expanse between them. So that's the inspiration for this poem. There is no table long enough. One man's unspoken inner edge of darkness, unconfronted and untransformed, sitting far away in his own fear, like someone looking through the wrong end of a child's telescope, like someone sitting at the end of an absurdly lengthened table, holds his intimate circle in fear of death and torture, threatens their families, poisons their lives along with his enemies, sews everyone into the straitjacket of immobile fear, then carefully tailors a uniform of death for every single one of his bullied young men to wear. May we see then in this allegory, as we too in this time sit so far away, the simple way an individual life, no matter how imprisoned, transformed by generosity, saves so many lives in the future. May we take the time while we confront this fear now on the outside with necessary and courageous physical action to preempt any future evil by bringing every hidden edge into the light, by bringing our inner troubles into the conversation where heads are allowed to lean close to one another at a table shortened to the point of mutual understanding. There is no table long enough to keep us from our own unspoken darkness.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Deb Kelly isn't here. Brenda, would you like to read again? And after that, we've lost Steve, Joanne Brown, perhaps. Brenda.
Okay. I'm going to read a very short poem. I've only been in Santa Fe for a year, and so I'm really inspired by the desert, the high desert. And anyway, this is just one of my poems about that. Just before sundown, on my walk up the high desert path, is the name of the poem. On this cold day, still winter, I remove my hat and earmuffs. The quiet twitter, a low peep of hope, flutters as the birds settle in for the evening. Our only earth rolls over and closes on the black falling caw and whirr of a crow on her way to her night resting place.
Very nice, thank you. Dr. Brenda, we don't have Steve. Joanne Brown, and after Joanne, I'll ask about Dorothy and Nancy Beauregard.
Well, I've been playing with persona poetry. And so you heard in what I read before, my poem in the persona of my grandmother. This is a different one, but it is persona as well. It's called Crusader for a Proud Boy. I'm not a bigot, you know, but those guys, those leftist heroes, are traitors to their race. You ask me to answer your questions. I don't like questions. You ask me what I was thinking that day. Honestly, I don't like to think too much. What I like is action, swift and blunt. If you ask me what I feel, honestly, I don't feel too much, except I'm angry. Angry my job's a bitch. Angry those fuckers live high and mighty while I'm down here. Angry those government shits don't fix this. Angry Blacks and Jews will replace me unless I do something. You ask me, we should start our own crusades. Ask me what I feel, I'm proud. And why not proud? Why not respected? See, now I'm the one asking the questions. Why am I not grieving?
Good. Thank you. Now, Dorothy. And you're muted. Where's Dorothy?
There she is.
Okay, here I am. This is an old one, but it seems relevant to me because I seem to be getting, the older I get, the less I can control my computer or my cell phone. This one's called Computer Class for Seniors. The seniors' computer class at the library is in session from 9 to 10 each morning. They are learning how to search the internet, cross-examine the wide World Wide Web, find recipes for French silk pie that doesn't use sugar, and the name of a good proctologist, and learn the latest travails of Martha Stewart. The instructor has a reservoir of patients the size of Lake Michigan. They all ask her questions at the same time, but not in unison. And no one listens to her answers. When the sixth class ends, Agnes Carter says, "Well, the only thing I've learned so far is how to slide the mouse on its little pad, but that's real helpful."
Thank you, Dorothy. And now Nancy Beauregard.
I like that, Dorothy. That was fun. Endangered Species. This is about the Collected Works bookstore here in Santa Fe. Bookstores are dangerous creatures, much like dragons, that sleep between brick and high-rise buildings, hide in stone caves, drift on London barges. Their windows blink in morning sunlight, reflect green and gold iris light. When they wake, yawn, whisper, and practice diction. Come in and explore. It's easy to be lured by the promise of words and escape into adventure on a gray afternoon, to shed scales of grief or sorrow, float down a jungle river with Humphrey Bogart, drink lattes on lilac garden couches, read poetry with Emily Dickinson, watch snow fall softly on city sidewalks, sip hot chocolate, as sweet as the first kiss in a romance novel, as sweet as our first kiss in college. I remember how you liked books, crime stories, thrillers, Tom Clancy novels, the ones without a love interest to mess with the hero's psyche. A contradiction, since you were a romantic at heart, giving me red roses on each anniversary, like the ones I placed on your grave for years after you died. Now I walk down aisles, touch a dragon's spine, books that breathe fire and life with mystery. That curve under my hands on a crowded shelves, as I lose myself in the belly, of an endangered species on a quest for what was lost.
Good, thank you very much. After that, we have Debbie Brody, who isn't here. Ann Bartel, are you
interested? I'm still here, yes. I have something short to read if you want me to.
Okay. Oh, sure, good.
Euphoria, trance, ecstasy. Dance with me, I am today's timekeeper. Let me dissolve your restraints. I am here, your inner nature. I unwind your tails, I swing a sickle and graft your grain. My mind, yours, bleed together, we two. Released from bondage, freed from limits, I create. Tongue to lips, teeth to grit. I cannot find what you do not form. So blow me into being. I am your divine spark. I charge your vehicle and thrust your heart. Given strength, inherently owned, I am peace, melodious tone. Om, creator. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next on my list, I have Marina. Would you like to read?
Yes. Dorothy, I love that. Like, I've learned how to slide the mouse across this little pad. That's pretty useful. I remember in the early 90s trying to convince a friend that there was this powerful thing you could do called cut and paste text. About 20 years later, I got an email from like, wow, yeah, that's great. So, you know, people learn shit slowly. There's a series of poems I've been cranking out that are all called Uncanny. The bank, the brink, brings closer the nothing that happens each time I exhale. Exhausting ceremony of breath. My creature form endures. It has no choice but to live till death sweeps in again. This is elemental, a cycle we are making. Struggling like salmon toward sources. The power is gravity, is flow, the undersong, a continuo, so many voices.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a poem here, which is inspired by the movie Power of the Dog. It's called Infinite Corridor, Walls Closing In. Infinite corridor, walls closing in. Bare bulbs flicker, cast shadows. A household's hidden pangs in the middle of a vacant landscape. Drinks as decoration. A pianola's stumbling measures heard again from an upstairs window as mockery. In the bedroom, a gutted rabbit. The taunt of a rope braid on the plane. Objects twisted, unintelligible, under a spell, while from the wings, dexterous music tells the murderer's plan. Chromatic run of chords reveals his calculations, tortured and driven by a need in the gut. The music paces itself, wise like slow vengeance to take advantage of chance. Then the act's done, finito. The objects stare unaware of their roles. Intent and chain of causality flit through light summer air and dissipate. intestinal event, a tormented ache, on waking, barely there. That's taken us through a second round. I don't know who would like to continue, but we sometimes do a third round. If you like, if you could pull something out.
Basia?
Yes.
I would like to break for a commercial, short yes. commercial here.
Oh.
Remember, next Monday night, if you're in Santa Fe, we'll have an in-person reading. It's the second Monday of the month at what we call Poetry Downtown. It's at the Convention Center. We start about 5:30 and it's mostly open mic. And we just read until they tell us to leave. So if you're in town, we'd love to have you.
Great, thank you. Anyone else have announcements?
I do.
Okay, Marina.
It's Monday night, and I'm on the air. I'm cast so far from 10 to midnight, if anyone is awake, playing music of an interesting combination of juxtapositions. So KSFR.
Tell me again where to find you.
KSFR.org online.
All right.
Or FM radio 101.1. It's at Santa Fe Community College radio station.
Marina, you could write that out and put it in the chat.
I'll put it in the chat. I'm on every Monday night and I play weird shit. A lot of women composers, friends of mine. Obviously, it's Women's Month and all that. So this time.
Very good.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So shall we start again? What about you, Don? He passes. That gives us Michu.
I'm going to have to go eat dinner. I'm sorry.
Okay, Dorothy. Eaten. All good. All right. Yeah.
Nice to see you, Dorothy. Thanks for your poems.
Bye now. Thank you.
See you soon. Yeah. I'm fading too, so, but I can read this. This actually, I don't know, I wrote a couple of months ago, I think, and it was one of those things that it still just, I'm not sure what it is, but I kind of just wrote until I encountered a punchline. So, it's inspired by one of my meditations. There is the still mountain of this particle body, and the swirling fountain of smaller particles, cells, sounds, and the barrier reef of self between, a fist in a cloud of ache and thought and yearning. No problem here, just roll call in the ecology of consciousness. It's all relative, really, among the churning dust motes and flying buckshot of sound and light. This body, sat still in Earth's magnetism, is, I'm told, actually revolving at hundreds of miles per hour around the relative stillness of a planet's center, which itself wobbles in the indifferent gaze of white beards and red dwarfs, who hang seething in the firmament, metabolisms of time as substance. All of us particles, masquerading waves, in the breath of a single primordial exhale, remembered in every quanta, the sacred trauma of a great sneeze. What if God had been wearing a mask?
Thank you, Michu. Next we have, I keep thinking in French. I want to say ensuite. We have who? Brenda, she's not here. Steve, Joanne. Possibly. You're muted.
Hey, Basia.
Yes.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. I'm sorry.
But I'll read another one, but I don't have to.
My mistake entirely. There you are. You have a chance to read.
Okay. Okay. She loved doves and the sun. The trees are quiet. Birds gather under them. Maybe one is a dove. The sun captures nothing. Nothing is captured. The broken juniper on the ground. Dead limbs twisted and true haven't given up their thread of a root. Sweet sap song feeds green a life. Fronds hold on, a whispered breath on winter's cold cusp, a desert survivor. Wheat-colored grasses shimmer in our sparklet orb, yellow, now gold, now brown. Chola, spiky cactus, and tamisa, there for me, the ravens, a dove, and the coyotes. We all want something from them. From my desert perch, I wish through yesterday's sunstream, and there's a dove sitting on the floor of my porch. I could have picked it up. Yesterday, my uncle told me something about my aunt. She loved doves. I go see her a couple of times a day. One of her flowers is an angel, solar activated. Feathers fill his blue mind. His words fall out as he remembers.
Thank you. Thank you, Brenda. Then Joanne, and then perhaps Nancy, and Ann Bartel again, and Marina, and me. And so Joanne.
Hey, this is yet another persona poem, and it was inspired by watching one of the documentaries on Woodstock. Called We Were Pilgrims. We didn't plan ahead where we would stay. We didn't think about food. It was like, hey, this sounds cool. Let's get in the car and go. Traffic was stopped dead. The state highway was a parking lot. We got out of our cars, started talking to strangers and walking. We were like pilgrims. They hadn't finished putting up the fences. There were no ticket takers, no gates. Almost a half million of us, and Richie Havens improvising a song called Freedom. Hamburgers were free, but they ran out. We got hungry. Some people got sick. Others had a bad trip. Helicopters brought hundreds of thousands of eggs the townspeople had boiled, and 45 army doctors, and the security detail, Wavy Gravy and the hog farm people, called the Please Force, took care of the ones who were scared in freakout tents. At night, the farm was lit by thousands of campfires. We saw stars, we listened to music until the sun rose over the hill. On the second day, the sky turned angry. The storm could have hit the electrical equipment and burned us all to cinders, but it didn't. We couldn't have imagined our future. We were against a war. We thought, if 400,000 people could come together with no violence, we could do anything. We could change the world. Then suddenly it was over. Almost everyone gone home. Back to school, to jobs, 600 acres of detritus left, a smell, the ghosts of young unbathed bodies. It was over, the caring for each other, the friendliness, the love, just the sound of bombs bursting in air, from Jimi Hendrix, alone on stage, playing the Star Spangled Banner.
Great, thank you so much. Okay, I've got to Joanne. Nancy, do you have another one?
I do. This one was just published by Tiny Sea Journal, a nature journal. It's called Fall Equinox. Time is relevant to me. I worry about how many years I have left to hug my daughter, how many years to wait for grandchildren. I worry about everything. Pulling weeds, writing poems, doing homework, paying bills. I worry about the orb weaver living in my lilac bush. Does she see the sun cross the sky in her window of leafy greens? Feel the autumn breeze play on her web? Does she know it is almost time to give birth to a new generation? Almost time for hers to end? And still, she repairs and weaves.
Lovely. Lovely. Thank you. All right. Now I want to be sure I get everyone in here. Marina, I think you're next.
Okay. Mother tongue loaded, migration of forms. That's the title.
Would you read the title again?
Mother tongue loaded, migration of forms.
Thank you.
Women's work is never done. Incest avoidance and baby talk. Debits debated, the cat in the snow. Nevertheless, things slip away. The empty quarter is rarely attained. It's always jam yesterday, jam tomorrow. What about today? We swim each moment in tragic distraction, anguish disguising the beautiful circuits. The nature of thinking is multi-track. The familiar forest as structuring boundary, a last grim, two M's, fable to thwart, peak, ruffle, deflate, abash us. Yet in some no man's land between the tabloid and the treatise, a noise outside the code can cause mutation. Squadrons of messenger birds descending on the cranium unheralded. Some mastery of attention is possible. Some stretches of purity as cannot be paraphrased. Safaris extended into yourself. The hard thing to notice is what's not there.
Okay. I ran into this piece of music on the radio. So this is another ekphrastic poem inspired by the track called On Every Corner from an album called The Well from the Tord Gustafsson Quartet of 2012. Early in the day, it's a jazz quartet. I'm just dropping in for music on the air. The bare intention of their aims not clear, but intricate work crochets a loose lace shared among the instruments. When the DJ calls it on every corner, I feel a hammock sway, yet I'm aware Escher could not ambiguate the keyboard flights of slow-tempered fingering with care by half-tones rising. Bowed bass, low sax affect to wander, but in its brushwork, I catch the languid snare hanging rhythms like nets across a stair. Each separate timbre starts to build again a cat's cradle in the air.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Any more announcements?
Marina.
Marina.
I can't. Oh, saying bye. Oh, okay, nine nine.
Bye. Okay. good night. Thanks, everybody. Yeah, take care.
Thank you. Nice to meet everybody.
Yes. See you soon.
Thank you. It was great.
Thank you so much, Asia.
Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.